The Reconstruction of Ancient History. The history of the ancient East is an interwoven nexus, embracing Egypt, Israel, Syria and Mesopotamia, known also as the Biblical Lands. The interconnections extend to Asia Minor, to Mycenaean Greece, and to the Mediterranean islands, Cyprus, Crete, and the Aegean archipelago. The histories of many of these nations are, for most of their existence, devoid of absolute dates and depend on interrelations with other nations. The chronologies of the Mycenaean civilization in Greece and of the Minoan civilization on Crete are built upon contacts with Egypt, for Egypt's chronology is considered reliable. In turn, the widespread Mycenaean and Minoan contacts and influences found in the archaeological sites of many countries are distributed on the scale of time by a detailed study of Mycenaean and Minoan pottery and its development. This pottery is found in countries as far apart as Italy and the Danubian region. Egyptian history. Although Egypt's chronology is used to determine the dates of other cultures, Egypt had no written account of its history, and the earliest surviving effort to put its past into a narrative is from the pen of Herodotus of the mid-5th century before the present era, regarded by modern historians as largely unreliable. 1. Though various king lists from earlier times have been preserved, it is the list of Manetho, an Egyptian priest of Hellenistic times, 3rd pre-Christian century, that served the historiographers as the basis for making a narrative out of the Egyptian past. The names read on monuments were equated, often by trial and error, with Manethonian dynasties and kings. The mathematics of history, it was agreed, could not be entrusted to Manetho, and is largely borrowed from the 16th century European chronographers, notably Joseph Scaliger, and his 16th and 17th century emulators Seth Galvisius and others, too, who dated in the same tables also various mythological motifs, such as the scandals among the Olympian gods or Heracles' heroic exploits. With the reading of the Egyptian hieroglyphs achieved in the 19th century, some selected dates of Scaliger were used by Lepsius, 1810-84, to date the monuments and thus the reigns of the kings of Egypt whose names were on the monuments. Lepsius was, for instance, of the view that Ramses II was the pharaoh of the Exodus, and thus biblical history, too, was drawn into a comprehensive scheme on which other histories could find their first foothold. Such was also the case with Hittite history because of a peace treaty of Ramses II with one of the Hittite kings, Hattusilis. Manethonian mathematics, or the number of years allotted to dynasties and kings, was soon disregarded. Astronomical datings. Even before Young and Champlain first read the hieroglyphic texts in the 1820s, Biot and others decided that astronomical calendric calculations could be used to ascertain the dates of the Egyptian dynasties. It was known that the Egyptian civil year consisted of 365 days, approximately a quarter of a day short of the true sidereal year. Thus the calendric dates of the Egyptians would gradually have fallen out of their proper place in relation to the seasons, and made a complete circle in 365 by 4 equals 1460 years. With the decipherment of the multitudinous Egyptian texts, a few references to a star as PDT were found, and were interpreted as recording the heliacal for rising of the southern fixed star Sirius, and if from monuments it could also be learned in which months and on what day the star rose heliacally. Events could be dated within the 1,460-year-long Sapphic cycle. This made it possible to build a chronology of Egypt around the few dates so fixed, and much work was spent in such an effort. With this as a basis, refinement could be achieved in various ways, most notably by trying to ascertain the length of the years of a king, usually relying on the highest year of his reign found recorded on monuments. Each king counted the years from his coronation. Egypt had no continuous timetable. However, in Egyptian texts no reference to calculating by Sapphic observations was ever found. Archaeological work in Egypt showed that besides the so-called pre-dynastic times, from which the data are incomplete, the historical past was twice interrupted for centuries when the land fell into neglect. The first intermediate period intervened between the epochs that received the names of the Old and Middle Kingdoms, the second intermediate period between the Middle and New Kingdoms. The New Kingdom consists of the Manthonian dynasties 18, 19 and 20. What follows is called the Late Kingdom. Hebrew history. Hebrew history has a narrative that consists of the Book of Genesis, the history of the world in which catastrophic events, the deluge, the overturning of the Tower of Babel, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, come to the fore, the latest of these coinciding with the beginning of the Age of the Patriarchs, which ends with the migration of the fourth generation to Egypt because of drought in Canaan. This part of the history is considered largely legendary. Following a sojourn in Egypt, the Exodus, the subject of the other four books of the Pentateuch, inaugurates the historical period. The historical events until the exile to Babylon are further narrated in the books of Joshua, Judges, Kings, Chronicles, and Prophets, and the post-Babylonian period in the books Nehemiah, Ezra, and of the later prophets. Many non-scriptural books with varying degrees of historical veracity add and take over where the Old Testament ceases its narrative. It was agreed since the days of Josephus Flavius, the Jewish historian of the days of Emperor Vespasian, that the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt took place after the second intermediate period, during the Egyptian New Kingdom, whether at its very beginning or several generations later. However, they disagree among themselves, some placing the exodus under Thutmose III of the 18th dynasty, others under Amenhotep III or his heir Akhenaten of the same dynasty, the time of the El Amarna correspondence, some placing it under Ramses II or Merneptah of the 19th dynasty, Israel Steel, and some as late as the 20th dynasty, after Ramses III repelled the invasion of the peoples of the sea, supposedly in the first quarter of the 12th century. So many various dates for the Exodus, a point that connects the Hebrew and the Egyptian histories, could be contemplated because these two histories as they are usually taught are remarkably out of contact for the entire length of the New Kingdom, and equally so for the rest of their histories, down to the time of Alexander of Macedon. The revised chronology. My approach to the problem of the synchronization of ancient histories took the following form. Upon realizing that the Exodus was preceded and accompanied by natural disturbances described as plagues of darkness, of earthquake, of vermin, accompanied by hurricanes and followed by a disruption of the sea, by volcanic phenomena in the desert and then by the prolonged shadow of death of the years of wandering, I looked for similar descriptions in Egyptian literary relics and found them in a papyrus ascribed to a certain Ipuwa, an eyewitness and survivor of the events. Additional data I found in an inscription carved on a stone shrine found at El Arish on the Egyptian-Palestinian frontier. Taking the latest possible date for the events described in the papyrus Ipuwa, namely, the collapse of the Middle Kingdom in Egypt on the eve of its being overrun by the Hyksos. The date was still centuries earlier than the earliest considered dates for the Exodus on the Egyptian time scale. If the parallels in texts elucidated by me are not a matter of coincidence, then the test would be in whether it would be possible, in leveling the two histories by synchronizing the end of the Middle Kingdom and the Exodus, to trace contemporaneity also in subsequent generations, not yet deciding whether the Egyptian history would need extirpation of ghost centuries or the Israelite history extension by the insertion of lost centuries. The next clue in my work of reconstruction was in equating the Asiatic Hyksos, called Amu by the Egyptians, that overran Egypt, prostrated as it was by the natural disaster described in the Ipuwa papyrus, with the Amalekites that the Israelites met on their flight from Egypt. Neo-Doctrinist Arab sources, as preserved by medieval Muslim historians, refer to a several centuries prolonged occupation of Egypt by the Amalekites, evicted from the Hejaz by plagues of earthquakes and vermin, while tidal waves swept other tribes from their lands. I could establish that the period of the Judges, when the population was oppressed by the Amalekites and Midianites, was the time of the second intermediate period in Egypt, and that Saul, who captured the capital of the Amalekites, El Arish being the ancient Hyksos' capital Avaris, put an end to the Amalekite Hyksos' domination from Mesopotamia to Egypt. In Egypt, the 18th dynasty came into existence, thus inaugurating the new kingdom. Was it Ka? Minus 1030, the time the biblical scholars would assign to Saul's capture of the Amalekite fortress, or Ka? Minus 1580, the time the Egyptologists would place the fall of Avaris? King David fought the remnants of the Amalekites, his marshal Job invaded Arabia, while Amenhotep I ruled in Egypt. Solomon accordingly had to be a contemporary of Thutmose and of Hatshepsut. I could establish that this queen came to Jerusalem and had reliefs depicting her journey to the divine land carved on the walls of her temple at Deir el-Bihari. In Hebrew history and legend she lives as the queen of Sheba who visited Solomon. The next generation saw Thutmose III invade Judea, sack the palace and temple of Jerusalem, and impose a tribute on the now divided country. The furnishings of the temple, carried away by Thutmose, were depicted by him on a temple wall in Karnak. These depictions match the biblical record of some of the temple furnishings. Amenhotep II was identified with the king whom an ancient epic poem portrayed as leading an enormous army against the city of Ugarit, only to be pursued to the Sinai desert. He was further shown to be the alter ego of the scriptural Zera, whose enterprise started similarly and ended identically. The last three chapters of the first volume of Ages in Chaos deal with the El Amarna correspondence. If the reconstruction is correct, then the time in Judah must be that of King Jehoshaphat and in Israel of King Ahab. It so happened that the books of Kings and Chronicles are especially rich in many details of the events that took place under these kings, and the numerous letters on the clay tablets of the El Amarna archive present a perfect ground for comparison as to persons, places, names, and events. Scores of identifications and parallels are brought forth. Did Jehoshaphat and his generals and Ahab and his adversaries in Damascus exchange letters with Amenhotep III and his heir Akhenaten across the centuries? At first we left the problem open, which of the two histories would require readjustment? Is the Israelite history in need of finding lost centuries, or does the Egyptian history require excision of ghost centuries? Soon it became a matter of certainty that of the two timetables, the Egyptian and the Israelite, the former is out of step with historical reality by over five centuries. A chronology with centuries that never occurred made necessary the introduction of dark ages between the Mycenaean and the Hellenic periods in Greece. Thus the shortening of Egyptian history by the elimination of phantom centuries must have as a consequence the shortening of Mycenaean Greek history by the same length of time. The Greek past. The theme pursued in this volume is the basic design of Greek history, the passage of the Mycenaean civilization and the intervening Dark Age of five centuries duration before the Hellenic or historical age starts ca. 700 years before the present era. This structure of the Greek past is subjected to a re-examination as to the historicity of the Dark Age. Greek antiquity is conventionally divided into three periods: Helladic, Hellenic, and Hellenistic. The Helladic period in its latest subdivision comprises the Mycenaean civilization. It ends not long after the conquest of Troy, regularly put about minus 1200. Its last generation is dubbed the Heroic Age. At this point, five centuries of Dark Ages are inserted into Greek history. The Hellenic period embraces the Ionian and Classical Ages, and stretches from ca. minus 700 to the conquest of the East by Alexander of Macedon. With his march toward the Nile, the Euphrates, and the Indus, minus 331 to dash 327, the culture of Greece was spread through the Orient and was itself modified by Oriental elements. This was the beginning of the Hellenistic Age. Mycenae can be regarded as the cultural center of the late Helladic period, Athens of the Hellenic, and Alexandria of the Hellenistic. In this scheme, as just said, the five centuries of the Dark Age are inserted between the Helladic and the Hellenic or, in other nomenclature, following the Mycenaean and preceding the Ionian Ages. The Mycenaean Age in Greece and the contemporary and partly preceding Minoan Age on Crete have no chronologies of their own and depend on correlations with Egypt. Objects inscribed with the names of Amenhotep II, Amenhotep III and Queen Tay of the 18th dynasty, found at Mycenae, were like a calendar leaf. Then excavations at El Amarna in Egypt established the presence of Mycenaean ware in Akhenaten's short-lived city. Such quantities of Mycenaean ware came to light in the course of the excavations that a street in El Amarna was dubbed Greek Street. Since Akhenaten's capital existed for only about a decade and a half, a very precise dating for the Mycenaean ware could be evinced, thus providing a link between Mycenaean history and the established Egyptian chronology. It was therefore concluded that the Mycenaean civilization was at its apogee in the days of Amenhotep III and Akhenaten of the 18th Egyptian dynasty. The first and the most important consequence was a radical recasting of Greek history. Since Akhenaten's conventional date was the 14th and 13th centuries before the present era, Mycenaean ware was also ascribed to the same period. By the end of the 12th century before the present era, the Mycenaean civilization would have run its course. The Greek or Hellenic time does not start until about -700. The years in between are without history on Greek soil. There existed tenacious memories of the time of the tyrants who ruled in the late 8th and 7th centuries, but beyond that, there was complete darkness. Thus by the 1890s the Hellenists were coerced by the evidence presented by the Egyptologists to introduce 5 centuries of darkness between the end of the Mycenaean Age and the beginning of the Hellenic. As we shall read on a later page, there was some consternation on the part of classical scholars when first the fact dawned on them that between the Mycenaean Age and the historical Greek time there was a span, more in the nature of a lacuna, of several centuries duration. In the end they accepted the Egyptian plan as being valid for Greece, still without having investigated the evidence on which the claim of the Egyptologists was founded. 5. In Ages in Chaos we have seen that, with the fall of the Middle Kingdom and the Exodus synchronized, events in the histories of the peoples of the ancient world coincide all along the centuries. For a space of over 1,000 years records of Egyptian history have been compared with the records of the Hebrews, Assyrians, Chaldeans, and finally with those of the Greeks, with a resulting correspondence which denotes synchronism. In volume the first of Ages in Chaos it was shown in great detail why Akhenaten of the 18th dynasty must be placed in the latter part of the 9th century. If Akhenaten flourished in -840 and not in -1380, the ceramics from Mycenae found in the palace of Akhenaten are younger by 500 or 600 years than they are presumed to be, and the late Mycenaean period would accordingly move forward by about 500 years on the scale of time. Yet independently of the results attained in Ages in Chaos, the problem of blank centuries, usually termed Dark Ages, increasingly claims the attention of archaeologists and historians. Although the enigma of dark centuries reappears in many countries of the ancient East, in no place did it create such discomfort as in Hellenic history. There it is an inveterate problem that dominates the so-called Homeric question. The historical period in Greece, the Hellenic Age, is ushered in by the sudden and bright light of a literary creation, the Homeric epics, of perfect form, of exquisite rhythm, of a grandeur unsurpassed in world literature, a sudden sunrise with no predawn light in a previously profoundly dark world, with the sun starting its day at zenith, from almost 500 years that divide the end of the Mycenaean Age from the Hellenic Age, not a single inscription or written word survived. Against this setup the Homeric question grew to ever greater proportions. In the light of, or better to say, in the darkness of the Homeric problem, we will try to orient ourselves by scanning some early chapters of Greek archaeology, and having done this, we should return to the problem of the deciphered Linear B script. 2 timetables are applied simultaneously to the past of Greece, one built on the evidence of Greece itself, the other on relations with Egypt. Thus instead of any new discovery reducing the question to smaller confines, every subsequent discovery enlarged the confines and decreased the chances of finding a solution. The setting of the stage. A traveler afoot, steadily on the road, marching from Athens westward, crosses the Corinthian Isthmus and, by continuing to the south, may arrive at Mycenae before the sunset of the second day. He follows the rocky road uphill and reaches the fortification wall of the ancient citadel. Rampant stone lions in relief crown the gate of Mycenae. Inside the gate, immediately to the right, he is shown the shaft graves of the ancient kings. The place is deserted, no village occupies the site. Resting at the gate, the traveler has before him the Argive Plain, the scene of some of the most celebrated events of the human past. Before the historical age of Greece started, called also the Ionian or Hellenic Age, Greece had another civilization. It centered at Mycenae, it spread over Greece and over the Helladic Islands, vestiges of it were found in many places of the ancient world. It was closely contemporaneous with the last phase of another civilization, the so-called Minoan, centered on the island of Crete to the south. These two great cultures left cities and palaces, ruined and deserted, and rich relics, pottery of exquisite forms, and gold and jewels, but no history known to modern man. Yet of Mycenae and of her heroes such a treasure of legend is preserved in Greek lore that some of the heroes of that kingdom in the Argive Plain and their contemporaries are more familiar to us than leaders of other races and other times much more recent. Agamemnon, Menelaus, Nestor, Achilles, and Odysseus are better remembered and more widely known than most of the military leaders of the great wars of our own century. Heroes of other times and nations are too often not known at all. Their names were: ask Oblivion. They had no poet, and they died. 1. This is said not just of heroes but of whole civilizations. Agamemnon and Menelaus were sons of Atreus, king of Mycenae, and legends were told about Atreus and Thyestes, brothers who quarreled over the throne, and about the sign in favor of Atreus that was seen in the sun retracing its course. These legends lived in Greek lore. Another cycle of legends centered on Thebes in Boeotia, and on the Argonaut expedition to Colchis on the Caucasian coast of the Black Sea, which preceded the Trojan War by several decades. The world of these legends, cruel and heroic and treacherous, occupied the fantasy of the Greeks, and Greek tragic poets of the 5th century, Aeschylus, Sophocles, and Euripides, had an inexhaustible store of themes to draw upon. There is hardly any problem in the entire history of literature that occupies the minds of scholars as much as the origin of the Homeric epics, the Iliad and the Odyssey, especially the question as to the time of their origin. The Iliad tells of the events of the final stage of the siege of Troy by the host of the Achaeans under Agamemnon, king of Mycenae. The Odyssey tells of the long wanderings of Odysseus, one of the heroes of that siege, on his circuitous way home. Tradition has it that Homer was a blind bard who lived and wandered on the Aegean coast of Asia Minor. Among the cities and islands that claimed to have been his birthplace were Smyrna, Chios, Colophon, Salamis, Rhodes, Argos, and Athens. Beyond this, the tradition is very meager as to the personality of the poet and the events of his life. Several apocryphal writings pretending to tell something of him were composed in Greece, but had nothing to commend them. When did he live and create? In his great epics he described the Mycenaean world which supposedly ended almost 5 centuries before him. He shows a very great knowledge of that time, yet he knew the world of the 7th century, too. There are those who argue that the author of the Iliad and Odyssey was not one man but a group of bards, or a succession of wandering poets, each of whom added of his inspiration to the epics, and sometimes it is also argued that there was no historical siege of Troy and that the story of the war is but the poet's creation. The Odyssey appears to be just a story of fancy. However, a war expedition in which many leaders, kings of cities in Greece, took part, and the capture of a fortress named Ilion or Troy, ruled by King Priam, could not be easily relegated, all and sundry, to the domain of fancy. Many Greek and Latin authors referred to it, though their source was invariably Homer. Among the early authors, Aeschylus, Sophocles and Euripides wrote cycles of tragedies dealing with the personalities of the Homeric epics and with their families, and many other poets followed in the path of the ancient bard. Virgil's Aeneid, telling the story of the peregrinations of Aeneas, one of the defenders of Troy, is famed as emulation of Homer's Odyssey. through the classical period of Greece, through the Hellenistic Age that followed, through the age of the Roman Empire, then through the Middle Ages, the Trojan War was the main event of the past, competing in this with the exploits of Alexander of Macedon, for whom Achilles of the Iliad served as the model. But in the 19th century, in the age of reasonableness that followed the age of reason, the view prevailed that the Trojan War was part of the imagery of the poet and Troy itself had never existed. However, in the 1870s the skeptics were confounded by Heinrich Schliemann, an adventurer with rich imagination, who as a cabin boy went on a merchant ship bound for America that suffered shipwreck ; he was a clerk in Holland, an importer in St. Petersburg, a man not to miss the California Gold Rush. Having grown rich through the years of adventures, Schliemann went to Hisarlik, a low hill near the Dardanelles, on the Aegean shore of Turkey, after proclaiming that he would find Troy there. Schliemann's advance public announcement as to his intent to discover Troy was met partly with disbelief and sarcasm, but mostly with indifference. He dug, destroyed much valuable material and disturbed some of the archaeological sequence, but he discovered beneath the mound of Hisarlik the remains of seven cities, one beneath the other. Three. He identified the second city from the bottom as the Troy of which Homer sang. It was a fortress, strong and rich in treasures, seemingly destroyed in a violent earthquake. 4. Later scholars identified King Priam's city as the sixth from the bottom, still later as Troy v. Ea. In 1876 Schliemann, now crowned with success, went to the Argive plain in Greece, to Mycenae, to locate the tomb of Agamemnon, king of men, the leader of the Achaeans at the siege of Troy. Soon he cabled to King George of the Hellenes that he had opened the grave of his predecessor among the five large shaft tombs which he discovered hewn in rock, with the skeletons of their occupants, with gold crowns and gold masks and much jewelry, gold vessels with oriental designs, and pottery. All kinds of voices were now heard. One scholar announced that the find and its treasures date from the Byzantine Age, 1st millennium AD, but in time the royal graves came to be accepted for what they were, of an era preceding the historical period in Greece, however not of Agamemnon and his house who supposedly lived in the 13th or early 12th century, but of an age several centuries earlier. How was this figured out? In the buildings and tombs of Mycenae are touches of Amenhotep II, Amenhotep III, and Queen Ti, wife of Amenhotep III and mother of Akhenaten, were found ; and in Akhenaten's short-lived city Akhetaten, deposits of typical Mycenaean pottery were unearthed. The age of these pharaohs in the conventional timetable belongs to the first half of the 14th century. Schliemann was wrong again in his identification, but right in the main. Here were for all to see rich relics of the Mycenaean civilization. Schliemann made further diggings at Tiryns, in the Argive plain, and next intended to dig on Crete, but he did not come to terms with the owners of the land, for which he made a bargain offer. At the beginning of this century Arthur Evans, having obtained a concession, dug at Knossos on Crete and brought to light the Minoan civilization, palaces and frescoes and paved courts, a silent world of bygone days. The Minoan civilization could be traced to various stages separated by definite interruptions: early Minoan, middle Minoan, and late Minoan, and it was the late Minoan age that ran parallel with the Mycenaean age. If anything, the Minoan civilization appeared as the dominant of the two. It was Evans' excavations on Crete that established the contemporaneity of Mycenaean ware with that of the late Minoan period. On Crete Evans also found tablets with incised signs of two scripts, called by him Linear A and Linear B. Later tablets with the Linear B script were found in large numbers at Pylos and at other ruined cities on the Greek mainland, and still later they were deciphered. But we are ahead of our story. Why no literary relics from five centuries? The Dark Ages left no literary remains, not even a single word on a sherd or a few characters on a clay tablet. M. Bohrer in his book Homer and His Faunus puts the problem in straight terms. There is no evidence whatsoever that the Mycenaean script continued anywhere in Greece after c. 1200. There is no trace of writing of any kind in the sub-Mycenaean and proto-geometric periods, or indeed before the middle of the 8th century, when the new and totally different Greek alphabet makes its first appearance. Now, this is surely not an accident. A single scratched letter from this period would be enough to show that writing survived, but not one has been found.